Live from Capital Public Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm Beth Ruriak. Last week, California's governor and the first partner were on what they called the California for All Healthcare Tour. This was a road trip of appearances in which the governor and the first partner explained and pushed healthcare initiatives. Well, on Wednesday, when Alabama's governor signed the new law nearly banning all abortions, and more states continued moving anti-abortion bills forward, the governor became impassioned in what his remarks were. So here's some of what he said at that final rally stop in San Diego. This is on Saturday.
Spare me your indignity about the unborn. This is about control. That's what it's about. It's about control. It's about patriarchy. It's about going back to a time we don't want to go back to. And we will fight. And we will defend women's rights. We will defend our families. I'm proud to be in this state, but damn it, I wish we were even bigger than we were.
That's a pretty good place to begin this week's conversation with the political junkie Ken Rudin. And this dramatic movement of abortion legislation is happening in this country at a time when the 2020 presidential race has a lot of candidates with a multitude of perspectives. So Ken is joining us from the Washington, D.C. area. Hello. Great to have you back on the program.
Thank you, Beth. I think Gavin Newsom is the only Democrat in the country not running for president. I just checked. He may be the only one.
You know, if you listen to that whole speech, you might think he is running for president, Ken.
Didn't it sound like it? It absolutely sounded like many of the Democratic candidates who are already running, who are already talking about the Alabama decision. Gavin Newsom didn't sound much different than what I heard from many of the other candidates.
So let's talk about who else is responding swiftly, like Governor Newsom. So of course, there's that California perspective. And this law that has set off such a dramatic and swift movement of reaction and additional legislation in this country. I don't know, where do you want to begin with this?
Well, I think the best way to begin with it is to see if there's any kind of momentum in the argument about abortion. And the reason I say that is because for the longest time, or at least for the last couple of years, it seems like the Republicans were on the ascendancy over the abortion issue, with Donald Trump leading the way, talking about how Democrats were guilty of infanticide. They were ripping the womb out of the mother's baby. They were known as the death party. They were talking about killing babies after the ninth month. I mean, it was very graphic and disturbing images that Trump would make during his rallies. But I think a lot of the Republicans were, you know, the Democrats were on the defensive over this, saying about late-term abortion. And now when you have these laws, I mean, it's most extreme in Alabama, but Missouri and Ohio and Mississippi and Kentucky and Georgia also have put in bills restricting abortion. It seems like now Republicans are almost on the defensive. Kevin McCarthy, the House Minority Leader from Bakersfield, would talk about, well, you know, something. I mean, I am for, I'm pro-life, but I support abortion in the instances of rape and incest and the health of the mother. And rape and incest are not exemptions that are in the Alabama law. So a lot of Republicans seem to be on the defensive. Democrats think they have a winning issue.
Do you hear the abortion discussion happening and then this exception decision happening around the Alabama law? People taking a kind of two stands at the same time, one on where they are on abortion as an issue overall and another on where they might or might not be on this Alabama law.
You know, that's true. And that is not a new thing in politics. I remember when Jimmy Carter was running for president in 1976, he was an evangelical Christian and he personally opposed abortion, but he supported the Roe decision. When Mario Cuomo, famously, when he was governor of New York, a very strong Catholic, personally, Geraldine Ferraro, too, personally opposed to abortion, but supporting the Roe decision. Now Republicans are also kind of doing, on the one hand, on the other hand, by saying that I opposed the extremes that have come out of Alabama, but I am still pro-life. I don't support abortion except in those exceptions. And that's not what the Alabama law provides.
Ken, let me play another clip from Gavin Newsom from this Saturday, because he took this farther than just what's happening in California to very specifically stating what he sees as the bigger purpose.
The agenda is crystal clear. I'm sure you heard that a moment ago. They want to roll back Roe v. Wade. That's the stated goal.
And that's the big question here is this a first step coming out of Alabama that will ultimately convince, with those four votes, the Supreme Court to grant a hearing to this case if it gets to that point? And obviously, the indications are that it would start with a filing by Planned Parenthood.
Well, that's true. I mean, because this law, I mean, you know, a lot of people have been talking for years how the Republicans have been trying to chip away at abortion rights with a law in this state, a law in that state, and, you know, just taking more and more restrictions that ultimately would bring it to the Supreme Court. The Alabama law was not chipping away at anything. It was a sledgehammer that basically ended abortions, plus the thought of, you know, a maximum sentence of 99 years for doctors who perform the abortion. I mean, that is very extreme. But obviously, and whether the Alabama law even makes it past some other local courts before the U.S. Supreme Court,
right,
the fact is that abortion is going to the Supreme Court, and that was the goal of the Alabama legislators from the beginning, and why Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, signed the bill, not because she talks about her, Kay Ivey, the governor of Alabama, talks about how every life is precious and you know, it's just, you know, life is everything. And she also put six people to death with death penalty in Alabama. So I don't know if some people's lives are more valuable than others. But the fact is that I don't know if they agree with the severity of the law as much as they want to see it go to the Supreme Court and ultimately decide on Roe. That's what Donald Trump said when he was naming two very conservative judges to the Supreme Court. When he was running for office, he said his court nominees would vote to overturn Roe. And I suspect with the kind of court you have today, probably more conservative than ever, ultimately, if the court has to rule on Roe, the future of Roe does not look so good right now. And that's why, you know, when Al Gore ran for president in 2000, his slogan was, "It's the Supreme Court, stupid." And that's basically what it's become. It's come down to that the Democratic and Republican views of abortion and Supreme Court justices are very paramount in presidential elections.
So we have 23 Democrats. The Republicans are just starting to come into the presidential race right now. But suddenly, the abortion issue, what abortion is, the laws surrounding it, the matter of women's reproductive rights is now at the top of the list that candidates are going to have to address. California Senator Kamala Harris wasted no time on Wednesday being loud and clear. And in fact, this soundbite was a very loud one. But here she is at a campaign stop, I believe, in New Hampshire.
Women's health care is under attack, and we will not stand for it.
So then her campaign put out an email that read, "This isn't a scene from The Handmaid's Tale. This is happening in Alabama, in our country, in the year 2019. No candidate is going to be able to hedge or be soft or get around where they stand on this issue, Ken.
No, that's true. But I don't think these Democrats will intend to be soft or skirt the issue. I mean, abortion, for the most part, I can't think of any leading Democratic, even Joe Biden, who has a tortured history of abortion throughout his long Senate career, is completely in favor of abortion rights and opposes the Alabama law. So I don't think these Democratic candidates are coming into this debate kicking and screaming. They're will gladly take on Trump and the Republicans on this issue. And it was not only Kamala Harris, who, yes, she was in New Hampshire when she gave that speech, but Elizabeth Warren and Beto O'Rourke and Amy Klobuchar and many of the other candidates almost immediately after the Alabama decision were very clear, saying this is dangerous, this is a radical attack on women, and this will not stand. Democrats think they have a winning issue.
I'm talking to Ken Rudin, the political junkie. He joins us from the Washington, D.C. area. Can I ask you to give me a snapshot back in time? Roe v. Wade happened in 1973. Nixon was in office. Then came Gerald Ford. So in the campaign leading up to Jimmy Carter being elected, how much was the abortion issue an issue? How did it play for candidates?
Well, it was certainly an issue in 1976. I mean, 3 years after the Roe decision, the Democratic platform platform supported abortion rights, even though, as I said, Jimmy Carter personally opposed abortion, and the Republican platform in 76 opposed abortion rights, even though First Lady Betty Ford famously was in favor of abortion rights. So the Republicans, I mean, didn't really use that as a big issue, even though they were, it was during the Carter presidency after 76, when the moral majority started and more social issues came to the forefront, and there were a lot of Republicans and social conservatives who pushed for Ronald Reagan in 1980. Even then, though, it really wasn't a big issue. Ronald Reagan, for all the conservative support he got, remember when he was governor of California, he signed one of the most liberal abortion bills in the country in 1967. So even Ronald Reagan, the father of conservatism or modern conservatism, basically was not an anti-abortion firebrand. It got later when Republicans took over Congress that they seemed to be on the ascendancy. They passed the Hyde Amendment that would disallow any federal money going to abortions. But then they had their mistakes. Then they had, I'm so excited about this.
I want to hand you a glass of water right now.
Yeah, right. Or vodka or something, because this is very important stuff. And basically you had people like Todd, you had Todd Akin in Missouri talking about how legitimate rapes could stop abortions. And you had Richard Murdoch in Indiana saying God probably planned these pregnancies. So sometimes the Republican Party seemed so extreme on the issue that the Democrats benefited from it. But then again, under Trump, he has used the abortion issue more effectively than any Republican, any president ever, especially from the anti-abortion side, by putting the onus on the Democrats for saying that, you know, they are for infanticide and killing babies, and a lot of his base supports that. The Alabama case is really a good example to see what's going to happen with the politics of abortion in 2020.
You know, Ken, you're reminding me that in some of these conversations upcoming, especially during the presidential campaign, we may need to have disclaimers, because the kind of conversation we're having is more like an evening news or a Sunday news talk show. And here we are at 9 a.m. out here talking in such detail about it. But I think it also speaks to where we are. I do want to add Nevada in on this conversation, because Nevada just seated the nation's first majority female state legislature in January, and one of the newly elected senators, she's a Democrat, Ivana Canella, she has passed what's called a Trust Nevada Women's Act. It would codify and update abortion rights and its waiting movement in the assembly. So I think we're going to be looking state by state throughout the country as the campaign continues, and it's going to be a big topic in debates. So can I switch gears and ask you about the debate season?
The debate season, my goodness, I mean, you have 23 candidates. It's either 23 or 24. Mike Gravel, the former senator from Alaska, is also in the race, but nobody seems to count him. He's not going anywhere, but that's not the point. So let's just settle on 23 for now, with Bill de Blasio, the mayor of New York City, who threw his race in, you know, threw his name into the race the other day. Now, right now, you need 65 to get into the debates, and it starts June 26th and 27th. In Miami. It'll be aired by NBC, MSNBC, and Telemundo. And you need to qualify for the debates, you need 65,000 donors, including 200 in 20 states and 220 different states, plus to get at least 1% in a conglomerate of national polls. So it's not
going
to be a large.
Sorry, I need to hear that again. 65,000 donors.
You need 65,000 donors, including 200 donors in 20 different states.
Okay.
And you have to register 1% support in 3 polls.
Ah, okay.
So, 1% doesn't sound like a lot, but 65,000 seems to be a lot. Like,
yeah.
when you think of 65,000, Kirsten Gillibrand, Cory Booker, Julian Castro, John Hickenlooper, Eric Swalwell of California, they don't have those donors yet.
Ah.
So right now you have 9 candidates who have the donors and the polls, you know, Bernie Sanders, Joe Biden, Kamala Harris, Pete Buttigieg, others, Elizabeth Warren, others. And then you have others who make it with the polls, but you can only fit 20. The Democrats, unlike the Republicans, in 2016, the Republicans had all the serious candidates who they thought was serious on one debate, and they had the kiddie table. Right. Yeah. But right now they're going to do two nights in a row, 10 candidates each, drawn by lot, drawn completely by lot, and not everybody will make it.
All right. Well, on the Republican side right now, there's former Massachusetts Governor Bill Weld, and there's Donald Trump. So what happens with preseason debates at this point?
Well, none. I mean, first of all, the history of incumbent presidents. I mean, remember when Teddy Kennedy challenged Jimmy Carter? Carter was too busy, he said, to have debates. When Pat Buchanan challenged George H.W. Bush, Bush wouldn't debate him. So usually incumbent presidents don't debate. And there's no reason, certainly in the polls, to show that there's any reason for Donald Trump to debate Bill Weld, who is, I mean, I see no strength for him at all. But the action, what happened on Friday, or Saturday actually, was the tweets by Justin Amash, right, the congressman from Michigan,
Republican,
who was a co-founder of the Tea Party Coalition, who was a principled conservative. Remember, during the Michael Cohen hearings, he was the only guy who didn't dismiss Michael Cohen as a liar. He said, what did Trump know and when did he know it? He was the only Republican to do that. Anyway, he tweeted on Saturday, he thinks that Trump is guilty of, or at least should be brought up for impeachment because of obstruction of justice and just lying his way through everything. So there is some talk about Justin Amash, who has been a very independent conservative, not one of those knee-jerk Republicans with Trump, with Amash running as a Libertarian Party candidate. So, I mean, I think there's nobody's going to threaten Trump with the Republicans, be it Bill Weld or Larry Hogan, who's the governor of Maryland, who's also talking about it. But if Justin Amash runs as a third party candidate, again, look, the Libertarian Party never makes a difference. Gary Johnson got 3% in 2016, which is the most the Libertarians have ever got. But this is a principled conservative. If more and more conservatives stand up to Trump and say that what Trump is doing is not true Republican philosophy, not true conservative philosophy, it could be a very interesting 2020 election, which it'll be anyway.
I want to read one of his tweets. Here goes. Here are my principal conclusions. 1. Attorney General Barr has deliberately misrepresented Mueller's report. 2. President Trump has engaged in impeachable conduct. 3. Partisanship has eroded our system of checks and balances. And 4. Few members of Congress have read the report.
That's so true. And the last one is especially true. Everybody was defending Trump, including the president himself, who said no collusion, no obstruction, when all he really had to go by was Bill Barr, the attorney general's 4-page summary. But even those Trump critics like Mitt Romney say, well, I have great respect for what Amash is saying, but I won't go that far. And Romney is right, because every Republican who has stood up to Trump has paid for it. Trump has either unleashed a torrent of tweets against them, mocking these opponents, or getting folks back home to vote against them in the primaries. John McCain, Jeff Flake, Mark Sanford, all these Republicans. I mean, McCain passed away, but the other ones, you know, basically they became useless because the Republicans turned against him. It'll be very interesting to see what Amash's argument for impeachment does within the Republican Party. It may not do anything. It may not affect anything, but for the Republicans to even, for the Democrats to even think of having impeachment hearings in the House, they need, it can't be just a Democrat versus Republican thing. One of the reasons why the impeachment efforts against Richard Nixon was successful in the House Judiciary Committee is because other Republicans stood up and said enough is enough. We'll see if that happens this time.
Well, by the way, Justin Amash is all of 39 years old, too. So he's going to be around for a while. He's going to be a voice to deal with regardless.
Well, we'll see, right? We'll see. We know that a lot of Republicans who stand up to Trump find that suddenly their constituents turned against him. We'll see how long he lasts, but it's fascinating to watch so far.
All right, Ken. Great to talk with you again. Have a good week.
Okay, I want to have some water right now.
All right. You settled right into it. You got your stride. All right, thanks. That is Ken Rudin, the political junkie. You can find a link to his website at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on your NPR station, Cap Radio.